This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
This week on Witness History. In 2011, Japanese tidying expert Marie Kondo released her debut book and became an organising icon around the world. Her method focuses on only keeping items that spark joy and speak to your heart. Now a best-selling author, award nominee and household name, she tells us how she's a little more relaxed about tidying since having children. Search and subscribe to Witness History wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, I'm Mark Lowen. Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service. In BBC OS Conversations, we bring people together to share their experiences. This time, it's conversations on dealing with trauma after vehicle ramming attacks. 14 people died and at least 35 more were injured when a driver of a pickup truck targeted crowds in New Orleans on New Year's Day. There have been an increasing number of incidents like this around the world, and we bring together those who have experienced the trauma of an attack and those helping with the aftermath.
One of the things we try to do is just to be there, be a presence, and to let them know that they are being supported, that people care, and that they're not alone in what they're going through.
Bourbon Street in New Orleans is one of the most famous roads in the United States, known for its bars, restaurants, music, and lively nightlife. At 3 a.m, it was still packed with revelers celebrating the new year when a man, thought to be acting alone, drove into them in what FBI investigators have described as a premeditated and evil act. He was shot dead by police at the scene. Less than a month earlier, a 9-year-old child and 5 adults were killed in a similar incident in the eastern German city of Magdeburg, where a car was driven through a crowded Christmas market. The suspect there is in custody for murder. These are among the latest in a series of attacks where vehicles have been used as a weapon, killing and injuring indiscriminately. We've brought together some of those who have been affected by these sorts of incidents to share their stories as they look ahead to the future. Not surprisingly, some of what our guests have to say you may find upsetting. For our first conversation, I was joined by Astrid in Germany. Her father died in 2016 when a Berlin Christmas market was attacked. Donna, she was watching the November 2021 Waukesha Christmas Parade in the northern US state of Wisconsin when a car drove into the participants. They included Kathy. She was one of 12 dancing grannies, a popular group of, should we say, older ladies who perform formation dances to support public events.
I heard a very, very loud car crash, which startled me, and my natural instinct was to turn around, and I saw the vehicle right behind me. I turned and just flew to the curb. And by the time I got up the curb and turned around, the car was gone up the street, and there was several grannies that were laying in the street. Betty, who I carpooled with, she was to my left a little bit. I picked up her glasses and her glove. She was out cold. She ended up with a very bad brain injury. She fluttered her eyes, and I said, you know, just don't move, don't move, don't move. And she just said, okay. And somebody was attending to her from the crowd. He was a paramedic. And then I just went to bodies, you know, that were laying on the ground. Some were alive, and a couple were deceased, and was pretty much a chaotic stampede running and screaming up the street.
My partner and I were sitting in a coffee shop because I had just moved to Wisconsin about 6 months prior. And I wanted to see what this lovely town was going to do for a Christmas parade. And I was sitting there and I just kept taking pictures of all the dance troupes and bands and all of the different things that were going on. And we were talking. And so I had taken a picture of the grannies. And when they were coming up to me, it was like, wow, they are gorgeous. They are just stunning. Their costumes were just blew me away how absolutely gorgeous they were. And so, of course, I got pictures of them. And then I turned to talk to my partner. And next thing I know, there's this car just barreling through. And I'm like, I thought it was an emergency vehicle and he was trying to get somewhere. And I'm like, you don't need to get anywhere that fast. What the hell are you doing? And then I realized, oh, this was not an emergency vehicle. And people around me are screaming. And my instinct is to just go see if I can help. Okay. So I'm running out the door, trying to see if I can help. It's 35 degrees and that's Fahrenheit here. So it's really close to freezing at the time. Didn't bring a coat, just ran. And I'm looking down the street and all I can see is I see bodies everywhere, just bodies. It was horrifying to see. I didn't hear the things that Kathy heard because I was inside. And so I heard that there was a roar of people and that, yes, you heard him, but by the time you heard him, it was too late.
Astrid, tell me if you can what your memories of the attack in Berlin, and I understand it affected you very personally, of course.
It was in the special winter time. Everybody was happy that it's Christmas time. We saw different lights everywhere. And my dad wanted to go with his partner to a theater. And unfortunately, everything was already full at this time. So they said, okay, we will go in the restaurant. Let's cross through the Christmas market. And they did it just to drink for a little Glühwein, we say here. It's nice to enjoy there the little houses with good food and some drinks. I was at home with my daughter. At this time, she was just 9 years old. We got suddenly the news, something happened in Berlin, in the city. So we were watching the news and I couldn't believe myself. It was automatically for me like a terror attack. I saw the social media and everybody was asking, are you okay? Are you okay? And we could all answer, yes, we are right. But on the next day, I got a phone call from her, your dad. I'm sorry. She had to tell me that my dad is not alive anymore. And I couldn't believe that it is my dad. I had in that moment in my head, he could survive. Maybe it was a shock moment of her. Like Donna and Casey told before, that you don't know what you think sometimes or what you see. Is someone alive or is he still, or is he dead? So I had the chance for my in my head that he could survive. Hotline, hotline, hotline. No answer, no answer. The police called me and said, we have to go in the house from your dad. Thank God I had the key. I went with the police to the house of my dad. I was sitting there 3 hours. Imagine, they had to take the DNA from him everywhere.
Oh my gosh.
You can imagine how I felt in this house for my dad. I was sitting there on the sofa. I still smell him. I saw his cup where he was drinking the tea before. And I took his pillow to get his smell on me. After that time, my aunt and me, we catch my daughter. And we tried to explain her what happened. That the grandpa will never come back again.
Astrid, I'm so sorry to hear this.
Yes.
And I'm so sorry to make you relive this.
It's a thing that we never know how we react. But when I think about it, even it's the same feeling of before.
Yeah.
I just can tell you that.
This is Kathy. Were you okay. Confused?
Of course I was confused.
It was so much confusion. Because there was no answered questions and no
answered question
no
on the first
as to why or who and right. And all those questions. I could not process anything for weeks. I still can't because I didn't actually see what happened. In the 2 seconds I turned to run to the curb, I missed the gore. And when I turned around, everybody up the street is on the ground.
And Kathy, now 4 years on, how have you managed to process it now, if at all? And how have you dealt with the trauma 4 years on?
Well, I had thank God, a therapist established who, you know, I called that night. But I will tell you that after the trial and this person is put away for the rest of his life. That gave me a little bit of, I don't know, a sense of relief, but still It's just hard to comprehend why on earth you did this. But in the long run, after you read the information, it sounded like there was, you know, drugs involved and just a nasty lifestyle.
Hmm.
And this is the result of his horrible decisions and his way of life.
I do still have flashbacks, and I do still, I mean, I remember it obviously like it was yesterday, like it was absolutely mm-hmm. yesterday. And for me, it was like, these are things you see on TV. When you see them right in front of your eyes, you don't understand. You have no comprehension of what just happened. You can't possibly understand what is going on, what's happening right in front of your eyes. Your eyes just can't. I wrote a little poem about it. It never went anywhere. It was just on my Facebook page, and it said, "Let my eyes be open to see the beauty, to see, you know, just to see different things." And I wanted other people to comment on it because I wanted this vision out of my head. I can't get it out of my head. I can't get the vision of people laying in the street pouring out blood. I can't get that out of my head. And like I said, it's like it was yesterday.
Astrid, when mm-hmm. when you hear of attacks now that still tragically continue like that in New Orleans, I presume that it takes you right back to 2016 again.
What me took back was the Christmas market attack in December 2024.
Of course.
Almost.
Magdeburg.
In Magdeburg, it was really one-to-one the same. Same pictures, same feelings, same kind of people who were dead, were first responder, with everything was the same. We were in our groups and we were really automatically shocked. We saw the pictures and we even couldn't sometimes to describe if it is Berlin or if it's Magdeburg. So we had our past package on our backside, but we knew we have each other. We can hold to each other and we can speak out what we feel, what we think on this moment. That was really brilliant that we have those groups of victims to share our minds at this time.
And Donna, I understand that you have actually joined the Dancing Grannies that were at the parade since that attack. Was that a way of trying to come to terms with what you witnessed?
Yes, it was. I was seeing a therapist at the time, and I kept saying about the grannies, and I wanted to help them. I wanted to do something, and I didn't know what to do. And he kept saying, contact them. See if you can just take them out to lunch. See if you can do this. See if you can do this. And I'm like, I kept trying and trying and sending email after email after email after email. And finally, they sent something saying, all of those who've been sending emails, come and talk to us about joining the grannies and see what we're all about. And I'm like, wait a minute, I didn't say I was going to join. But okay, here I am. I'm here now. And to be honest, it actually does help. I mean, the first thing I said to my partner when this happened is, I said, I'm never going to a parade again. Now I don't go to them. I'm in them. It's healing in a sense to actually go there. But yes, I like Astrid. I keep my eyes open. I'm constantly like searching around me. And so in 2022, when we did Waukesha again, that was a very surreal kind of a moment. And Waukesha has put in these barricades that I've seen a test on them. You couldn't get a semi past those things. Okay. And I do feel safe in Waukesha because of that. Most other cities don't have that level. And if a parade doesn't have security, like basically at all, we won't do a parade because no, we have to keep ourselves safe. We must. And it is healing to be able to talk to other people like Kathy, other members of the group, other people who have been there. And in fact, this conversation is rather healing as well, even though it's creating a lot of like bringing up all those emotions again, but it is healing in a sense too.
Yes.
And I'm so sorry that Astrid went through what she went through. And I still cry for the grannies every day, just every day. I mean, it's just horrible to think about the things that we saw out there in that street. It was, but I will say this. So one of the things I said, and I said it pretty much right at the beginning, and our parade happened on Main Street. Okay. And I said, Main Street is mine. You cannot have Main Street. And now when this happened in New Orleans on the 1st, I said, New Orleans, you got to take back Bourbon Street. That is yours. You take back the entire city of New Orleans. You own that place, not him.
Donna, now herself a dancing granny, along with Kathy. They were in conversation with Astrid in Germany, and we do appreciate them taking the time to share their stories with us. It's hard to imagine the trauma they all feel. I only hope that opening up about it, and with each other, may provide some kind of catharsis. I'm Mark Lowen, and this is BBC OS Conversations from the BBC World Service. Let's pick up from Donna's thoughts on dealing with the ongoing trauma of the attack she experienced and her advice for people in New Orleans. For our second conversation, we brought together a husband and wife team in the city who've been providing support to those affected by the New Year's Day vehicle attack. Paige Brooks is a pastor and chaplain in the Louisiana National Guard, a reserve military force in the US. His wife is Ashley Brooks, a licensed professional counsellor. I asked them how they first heard about the Bourbon Street attack.
We'd slept in. It was New Year's Day. We're still on holiday, and my wife woke up first. She put her hand on me, and she said, "Wake up, something's happened down the French Quarter."
When I woke up, I realized I had a ton of text messages, which I thought was just a well-wishing for the new year. But as I began to look through them, they were, "Hey, we're thinking about y'all. Are y'all okay?" Questions about our safety. And it startled me. And I began to look at the news and begin to realize what had happened. I immediately tapped Paige to get him. Actually, I don't think I tapped him. I think I might have hit him a little harder and told him to get up. But
I think you did. Yeah.
But I was like, "Wake up." I was just very overwhelmed with the reality that something like this could happen so close to home. And then very concerned for people that I know in the area, in the city.
As the days kind of unraveled, I started talking to several of our soldiers in the National Guard that we had a few that were actually there on Bourbon Street that talked to me about the scene that had unfolded. Did have one that had a family member that was killed in the tragedy. And so a lot of my time has been spent the past couple of days being able to talk to those soldiers. And the one that was there and on the scene, she recalled, you know, just being there that night and all of a sudden hearing what was going on outside, the crash, and then gunfire a little bit later, people running into the bar where she was. A lot of my time spending time with these soldiers, talking with them, was just allowing them to kind of recount, process what was going on as it was unfolding, and helping them to get in touch with those emotions as they were trying to process it. Some of them were very reluctant to even want to kind of bring it back up, but then others were very, very forthright in what was going on. And then especially those that had lost a friend or a loved one, the emotions were quite strong as they were trying to deal with those emotions and just process what had happened and just the reality of such a surprising attack here in our town that this would happen.
How have you found that process, Paige, of hearing directly from people and hearing such trauma? Do you find it cathartic for them to be able to talk to you? And how do you manage to comfort them?
So, you know, my role as a chaplain is to be there and kind of provide like immediate assistance. I often tell people that we're almost like the ambulance that is coming, and we're there to kind of provide like that primary care, at least immediately. You know, one of the things we try to do is just to be there, be a presence, and to let them know that they are being supported, that people care, and that they're not alone in what they're going through. So part of my role as a chaplain was to just let them talk. And a lot of healing can take place just if we talk and get it out. There is a cathartic type of healing that happens when we just simply listen and allow people to get it out. And then just to reassure them that there are resources that they can go to, that the situation is not hopeless, even though they might feel that way at the moment, especially in the grief and in the pain and the shock and surprise. But I also think that's important long term for people to process this. And, you know, I think in two ways. One, with our soldiers, for those that have deployed before and, of course, have previous trauma there. But then also for here in South Louisiana, we tend to have, as you might know, you know, geographically, we're right on the Gulf of Mexico. And so we have hurricanes that hit us, floods that hit us. So this South Louisiana population has a lot of trauma that has built up. And my wife can probably speak to this better than I can, especially from the counseling side, but being able to not let that trauma build up is extremely mm-hmm. important. So Ashley, do you want to talk about that for a moment?
Yeah. One of the things that happens with trauma is that our bodies naturally react to a fearful situation, which is a normal reaction. And so we have that fight, flight, freeze, fawn response to any sort of traumatic experience. And whether that traumatic experience might be something that we see personally, or it might be something that happens close enough to us that we experience through a situation where we are aware. For example, like if we're thinking about this experience or this situation down in the quarter, it can be traumatic to hear about that situation and realize that something like that can happen in a place where we visit pretty regularly or we live. And so what happens is that our bodies naturally react to that fearful response. When Paige talks about the processing out, if we are connected with our thinking, we walk through the story with someone, we realize that there are natural and completely okay and normal reactions from an emotional standpoint that we have to that. And then recognizing that there's a body reaction and body connection to that as well, and allowing all that to process through is really important.
Without asking you, of course, to break the confidence of your patients, I wonder if you could give us an idea of some of the things that really stuck with you in your counseling sessions with them and those who were affected by this tragedy.
Sure. So one of them was down on the quarter. They were in the hotel and they were, they heard about the attack. The fear of overwhelm completely overwhelmed them. And so they were wanting to get home, but then they were also fearful to go outside. And so they immediately were just like, can we leave now? And the hotel is like, we're on lockdown. We can't go anywhere yet. That creates a sense of panic and fear, knowing that they can't go anywhere. As they were able to leave, the panic and the fear subside, but recognizing that they were just inches and feet away from the situation that actually happened, is then there's a relief and even some guilt over the fact that they survived the situation and they could have been out. They decided not to go out at that the time before that they left. They decided not to go out that night, even though they made that decision, and then just were like, no, we're not going to go out tonight, but would have been out had they chosen to go out during that time. And so it was scary for them.
Has the trauma of people talking to you deepened your own trauma to some extent of having witnessed this?
We have to find our own ways to be able to cope with it and to be able to talk about it. You know, I'm thankful that I do have such a wonderful wife who's a counselor. We certainly talk to each other and support each other, and we try to help one another kind of process through these things. And then we have our own support networks of other chaplains and pastors, as well as counselors in her case, that we have to deal with. And so, or that helps support us. And so, you know, kind of the point is that whether it's an individual who is simply, like in this case, out in the middle of a tragic situation like this, or even professionals like us that are trained, we all have to take time to process these things ourselves. And we all need to take time to make sure that we all have support and that we are helped in those different ways. And I'm certainly thankful again for my wife and others that support me. And I know that she has people that support her, but we've been very careful, not just with this situation, but even other previous situations that we've been part of or that we go through as we help people to make sure that we process it ourselves and find healing ourselves.
Paige and Ashley Brooks in New Orleans. Thanks to them and our other guests this week for sharing their experiences.
This week on Witness History. In 2011, Japanese tidying expert Marie Kondo released her debut book and became an organizing icon around the world. Her method focuses on only keeping items that spark joy and speak to your heart. Now a best-selling author, award nominee, and household name, she tells us how she's a little more relaxed about tidying since having children. Search and subscribe to Witness History wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Mark Lowen, and you've been listening to The Documentary from the BBC World Service.
This this week on Witness History. In 2011, Japanese tidying expert Marie Kondo released her debut book and became an organizing icon around the world. Her method focuses on only keeping items that spark joy and speak to your heart. Now a best-selling author, award nominee, and household name, she tells us how she's a little more relaxed about tidying since having children. Search and subscribe to Witness History wherever you get your podcasts.